One of the greatest needs in this world today is competent leadership. As we progress through these early decades of the 21st century, our global civilization faces unprecedented problems and perils, much of it brought about by unbridled human nature, coupled with the never-ending march of technology. We live in an age that has increasingly untethered itself from the mores and values of the past that so positively contributed to the building of Western society with its freedoms, securities, and prosperity. And now this world is rapidly heading for some very tough times, and tough times call for tough decisions. And those decisions will be made in the years ahead by world leaders. But where do we find leaders today with the wisdom of a Solomon, with the vision and determination of a Winston Churchill, or the stature of an Abraham Lincoln? Men and women who can stand in the gap in the critical and pivotal times in history. Even Walter Cronkite, a few years before he died a few years ago, but a few years before that, he was quoted as saying, "We are in a leaderless world." Competent leadership is one of the most important needs in the years ahead, the very same commodity that has always been sorely lacking all down through history. It's been said that history is a graveyard of civilizations that declined and fell for lack of effective leadership, for the lack of courageous leaders who would be able to change things for the better. All too often, weak and visionless leaders and political parties have failed to provide for the security and the basic needs of their people. And the sad experience of history shows that governments endure only as long as they respond successfully to challenges that arise having to do especially with security and the basic needs. France, Russia, Italy, and Germany are prime examples in recent centuries. People always wonder how dictatorial regimes in countries such as these ever came into power in such a civilized world. The answer in a nutshell is lack of good leadership. To be more specific, lack of good leadership in the era that preceded these tyrants and dictators. Unreasonable men always gain control by default. And this last century has seen its share of self-seeking tyrants intoxicated by ambition and greed. Just look over in Africa and you can see how many people have been thrown out of office or died in office, and they were billionaires in some cases, and yet their people were starving to death. Today's problems are increasingly compounded in this ever more complex world to the point that it's severely taxing the abilities of world leaders to solve the problems that come up. The potential exists of upheavals on a scale unprecedented in human history. And as Bible prophecies show, leaders will arise who will bring unparalleled ruin and suffering on this earth. Even today, the stage is being set for the final chapter of man's rule on this earth to be played out. We have now witnessed the emergence of strong, very self-assured nationalistic leaders, such as Xi, Premier Xi in China, such as Erdogan in Turkey and Putin in Russia, just to name a few, and only a strong man in Europe has yet to come on the scene to complete the picture. Today's bewildering problems are crying out for solutions, crying out for capable leaders who will make right decisions that will permanently advance and improve human conditions on this earth. Where will leaders such as these come from? The answer is found in the book of Revelation. Let's look there, starting in Revelation, the second chapter. Revelation 2, we'll read verses 26 and 27. I'll give you a few seconds to get over there. Revelation 2, verse 26, it says, "And he who overcomes and keeps my works unto the end, to him I will give power over the nations. He will rule them with a rod of iron. They shall be dashed to pieces like the potter's vessels, as I also have received from my Father." The verse 27 is an inset there. So you can continue where it says in verse 26, "I will give power over the nations." Then it skips to the end of verse 27, "as I also have received from my Father," to give a complete thought there. Let's look at Revelation 5, verse 10. Revelation 5 and verse 10. It says, "And have made us," he's talking about you and me, "made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth." To reign means to rule, you know, to have authority, to have responsibility, to have leadership. And one more here, Revelation 20, verse 6. Revelation 20 and verse 6. It says, "Blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such the second death has no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. So, since much of the responsibility is going to be placed on our shoulders as kings and priests who will lead others in the future, there's no more important topic for me to speak on this afternoon, no more important area for all of us to be growing in than that of godly leadership. In fact, if you want a title for this sermon, just entitle it Godly Leadership. Just as each of us will assume God-given positions of leadership given to us by Jesus Christ at his return, each of us is just as surely being trained now in this lifetime to properly lead others. In other words, given the capacity to fulfill that important responsibility. God's not going to give us a job to do without training us ahead of time. That's not his way. He always trains the leaders to do a specific job ahead of time. It won't be on-the-job training. That leads to disasters. After all, you can't just hand a person authority and expect that they will automatically and successfully fulfill that role. What are those tangible and sometimes intangible qualities that a good leader must have? When we think of leadership, we most often think in terms of personal appearance, great voice, a fine, quick mind, a great education, and a dynamic personality. But charismatic men and women possessing these qualities are not necessarily qualified to assume leadership roles. One needs only to study the life and legacy of King Saul to see just such a person and just such a failure in leadership. Even Adolf Hitler had some leadership abilities. I'm not saying a whole lot, but he did have some. But his leadership brought about one of the darkest periods in human experience. Let's look at some of the vital basic traits and qualities that a leader must possess to be able to effectively lead others in a godly manner. The most important quality that a leader must have is righteousness. Righteousness. It is the bedrock that sustains and protects everything else that he brings into his role as a leader. Turn to Exodus, the 18th chapter. Exodus 18. And we'll read just one verse, verse 21. Exodus 18, 21. It says, "Moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of 50, and rulers of tens." And so God knew, and he directs Moses and others to select people who have character, who have this aspect of respecting God's law. And so it's right there in Israel, right at the beginning of Israel's travel to the promised land. God lays that out very clearly. You don't have to turn there, but Proverbs 29:2 says, "When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, the people groan." So it just shows the difference. And God wanted to start things off right with Israel, so that's why he gave them that directive. Beliefs and values are the moral underpinnings of any life. And as goes the leader, so goes the institution, whether it be a family, a church, a nation, or a company. A leader's personal integrity, I'm going to skip something here. The leader is a symbol and the embodiment of shared beliefs and shared goals and how to achieve them. The leader, personal integrity must be above question, and his faithfulness must permeate that institution that he is leading. The inspired record shows that throughout the entire history of ancient Israel, The entire nation, over and over again, followed the example of its king for good or for evil. People do follow the example of their leaders. How many companies have experienced dynamic growth over time, only to find themselves on the sidelines in failure simply because their leader or their leaders turn to the bottle or to womanizing or to embezzling? It's filled our headlines in the news over my lifetime. An important part of righteousness is self-discipline, because the natural tendency is to let down over time and stray from that moral high ground. That's just the way human nature is. When someone acts in accordance with and in adherence to God's and man's law, in all that they say, think, and do, we say they have character. We say they have integrity. Leaders need not only principles and values, but also the character to live those principles and values. A true Christian leader is one who adheres fervently to the law of God. He will always be thinking about what is right and not about what is expedient, as so many leaders today do. The lack of this vital element in leadership is what has spawned so much that has shocked us in the national news over the last few years. Prominent names in the media and in sports, people who are role models, if you're in the limelight, if you're up in front of people, that casts anyone into a leadership role, whether wanted or not. And so all these people that we've seen in sports, media, in Hollywood and all, we see them now making all kinds of bad decisions, stupid decisions, immoral decisions. Yes, Enron years ago was an example of a business gone bad. When it fell, it just robbed a lot of people of their life savings who had invested in it. The subprime crisis is another. There's fraud at every level. Pedophiles in the Catholic Church is another one. It was a moral problem, but it was also a leadership problem because it was never effectively dealt with. Thomas Jefferson once said, and I quote, "In matters of principle, stand like a rock." So righteousness, through the power of God, is the bedrock of godly leadership. The second important attribute any leader must have is wisdom. Wisdom. He must know whereof he acts and speaks, always having the correct facts and information behind the decisions that he makes and his policies that he makes. A proper education is necessary to acquire the proper knowledge to lead, but a leader's ability in this area must progress, far beyond just knowledge. Knowledge is the possession of facts. It's the learning of information. Understanding is the grasp, not only of information and facts, but a grasp of their meaning and their relationship to each other. It's knowing what the facts mean, and it's the ability to discern what is true and what is important. And that usually involves a grasp of the true origin and outcome of things as well. It enables one to see the big picture in any given situation. So again, usually there's training ahead of time for somebody before they enter any type of endeavor like that where they're going to be put in a leadership position. In a 2005 United News article, Gary Petty wrote, and I quote, "A person can memorize a great deal of knowledge and not understand how that knowledge relates to others or to specific situations. A person can have understanding but not have the ability to practically apply what they understand." So just having knowledge and understanding does not properly equip someone for a leadership role. It also takes wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to draw on and practically apply that information and its meaning, in other words, that knowledge and understanding, so as to make the proper decision or to correctly analyze and solve a problem. For a Christian, wisdom is the discipline of applying truth to one's life in the light of experience, the ability to correctly analyze all the input and make the best decision. Wisdom is learned, in most cases, it's learned. It is learned through biblical study, personal experience, and the observation of others and watching them make their successes and their failures in life, their mistakes. And it is ultimately expressed in the daily choices we make in our relationship with God and man. In addition to learning wisdom, this precious commodity is also available as a gift from God to his children. Let's notice that in James, the first chapter. We'll read James 1, chapter 1, verse 5. I'll give you a few seconds to get over there. James 1, verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. And it goes on about also asking in faith. You know, it takes faith to believe that God will give you this wisdom. So if you don't have faith in your request, what good is it? And again, if we ask for wisdom, God will give us that. That's a promise from God to you and to me. An example of this is found, you don't have to turn there, but just mark it down, 1 Kings 3, where Solomon asked God for an understanding heart in order to judge Israel. And God did that. He actually did give Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond anyone on the face of the earth. 1 Kings 4:30 tells us that Solomon's wisdom, and I quote, excelled the wisdom of all the men of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. So again, that's a promise fulfilled, just what James 1 verse 5 says. Another very important attribute of leadership is vision. Vision, very important. Every great leader must have vision. It goes hand in hand with wisdom. He must be able to see ahead, think ahead, and plan ahead, and then be able to articulate that vision to others whom he's leading. Vision is a mental journey from the known into the unknown. It's the mental image of the future, and leaders operate from a vision that influences and directs others along a certain course of action that they can see ahead of time. The truly great visionaries can shape events that permanently change the course of history. Winston Churchill was such a person of vision. Turn to Proverbs, the 29th chapter. Proverbs 29, we'll read verse 18. Proverbs 29, verse 18. It says, where there is no, now the old King James says vision, new King James says revelation, the people cast off, the old King James says the people perish, new King James says the people cast off restraint, but happy is he who keeps the law. So again, I think I don't understand how they got this New King James translation. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong, but to me it makes more sense. Where there's no vision, the people perish, because that does make sense. It's more of a hard-hitting thing that's it's said than the other one. So again, maybe the other has some validity. But again, it shows, and then it talks about God's law. The man or woman who keeps God's law will have vision, because they will be given a penetrating insight into human nature. You know, even as even in my teens, when God was leading me through His Spirit, I was given a lot of insight, just like you are, into human nature. You know, I could see things that people were doing all around me, maybe to influence me or to trip me up or whatever. That I wouldn't have seen before that, before God called me. You know, it's almost like God gives us a more of a discernment of things. You know, women are very good at discerning and reading people. You know, men aren't so good at that. But again, He gives us understanding that way when we keep His law. And that's part of what a leader needs as well. Again, he or she will possess a superior understanding of the principles of life, and will therefore sense before others the outcome of various decisions, situations, and problems. Someone once wrote, one who leads must have the ability to see beyond the mundane problems of the here and now and be able to see the promise of tomorrow. The present will always have its problems. The future may even at times look bleak. but a vision of what ought to be, you know, in this person's mind, what ought to be, coupled with a knowledge of how to bring it about and the courage to step out and do it and actually see it through, is what separates great leaders from common mortal men and women. If a leader has the foresight to create plans and programs to reach the goals of his organization, then he will command the respect and the confidence of those who he's leading. They'll be able to see this man's thoughts and what he's planning are good. They'll see the fruits of it. Another quality that every leader must possess, and one that I briefly mentioned during my last point, is that of courage. It's the ability to step out and do, even during the tough times and the perilous times. Those who are fearful or worriers or just plain timid don't make good leaders. A good example of this leadership quality of courage is David. Let's look at an example of that in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. 1 Samuel 17. Mm-hmm. 1 Samuel 17, we'll read verses 36 and 37. Here's what David said. He said, "Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." Moreover, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." So here was a young boy, a teenage boy in all probability, and he had learned to have confidence and faith in God at this tender age in life. And his willingness to courageously intervene on behalf of the people of God was very admirable. Even King Saul saw that. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy, the 31st chapter. Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31, we'll read verses 7 and 8. 7 and 8. It says, "Then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, 'Be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers and give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear nor be dismayed.'" You know, admonition from God here through Moses' words, "do not fear," that's all through the Old Testament. And it's all through the New Testament. I didn't realize how much until in my other Bible that I use, a study Bible at home. I started underlining. I went through the New Testament. And anywhere where it says, "fear not," or "do not fear," or "why you worry," I underlined it. And I found out I've got lines everywhere in the New Testament. It's all through the New Testament. It's all through the Old Testament, not as much as the New Testament. But, it's something God wants us to learn thoroughly. He's always encouraging us. You know, "Don't be afraid. You know, I've got this. I'll take care of this." And yet what happens? We're afraid. You know, we have to read those words and believe them. And again, this is an example here from leadership, that was being passed on from Moses to Joshua. And it's one thing that was said: do not be afraid. Another part of courage that is vital to any leadership role is the courage or ability to take the criticism or correction that comes from making mistakes. And they are a part of the process when you're a leader. And again, to take that and to keep moving forward. Sometimes the criticism is valid and sometimes it's unwarranted, but either way we have to just learn from it and move forward. Mistakes will occur. It is much harder being the boss. I found that out when I wasn't the boss. I could see all the mistakes of the boss. Everybody's that way. But when I was the boss, I realized just how complicated it was, especially in dealing with people. You know, that can just drive you to distraction. You know, but just human nature, you know, people not coming in on time and, you know, just all kinds of things like that, you know. I had one employee one time, she would say, I'm going to the bank, take the deposit over, and she wouldn't come back. One day I looked, well, she was going to the beauty parlor, you know, and having her hair done at that time. So human nature is quite something, you know. You learn a lot when you're working in an office or a company or whatever. Again, mistakes will occur. Two quotes I have along those lines. One is, I quote, the ones who never fail are the ones who never try. And the second one is of more recent vintage. You've probably heard it. If you don't have any bugs on your windshield, you haven't been going anywhere. That's true. Another vital attribute a leader must have is humility. There are two kinds of leaders: those who use authority to compel grudging obedience from their followers, and those who inspire and lead by example. The authoritarian type of leader considers only himself and the grandeur he hopes to produce in his empire or his business. Napoleon and Hitler were two of this type. Christ even described this type of leader in Matthew, the 20th chapter. Let's take a look at that. Just one verse, Matthew 20:25. Matthew 20, verse 25. It says, but Jesus called them to himself and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. So he was pointing something out that everybody knew. You know, everybody knew that those right at the top will trample you or take what you have or whatever, you know, tax you to death or whatever man's government has done over the centuries. But again, he saw that type. Christ was aware of those types. A lot of the Roman rulers, some of the Pharisees and all. But again, these are the strutting and pompous dictators of history who give little or no consideration to the needs, aspirations, wishes, welfare, or well-being of those they lead. And you know, how many untold millions of boys and men were forced to give their lives as cannon fodder because of some tyrant telling them they had to march to war, you know? I couldn't tell you, probably in the billions. It's probably in the billions over 6,000 years. And look at how much harm and suffering has resulted from men coveting after positions of leadership and responsibility, all for the sake of self-exaltation, to exalt themselves. But Christ also describes another type of leader here in this same chapter. Let's look at the next verse, verse 26. It says, yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Jesus Christ explained that leaders must be the servants of those whom they lead. You don't have to turn there, but Matthew quotes Christ in chapter 23, verse 12 of Matthew. As also saying that, and I quote, whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and whoever shall humble himself shall be exalted. The man or woman who is willing to sacrifice themselves to the task at hand and to the well-being and the advancement of all concerned is the one others will be most inspired to follow, since he or she will be leading by the example of service and sacrifice. This spirit of humility, this true desire to serve others, this spirit of selfless dedication to a cause is foundational to all true leadership. And Christian leadership based on these principles is the best possible preparation for the much bigger responsibilities ahead in God's kingdom for all of us. Another quality leaders must have is decisiveness. Decisiveness. A certain amount of speed and decisiveness is found in the makeup of every great leader. Many of these qualities of leadership build on one another, because one who has knowledge and wisdom and experience, who has the big picture in mind, can make the right choices in situations that present themselves. Other people may be, you know, in the dark about, well, what should I do here? But he sees the whole big picture. He knows exactly what to do in most cases. The one who leads must have the most overall knowledge, the clearest vision of realities, past, present, and future. Sort of just like the opposite of the blind leading the blind. It's sort of exactly the opposite of that. Yes, the clearest vision. He must always be ahead of those who are following him, able to decide quickly the right course of action when problems arise and choices must be made. There are many times when Christ took decisive action like that all through the New Testament there in the Gospels. We live in a world where all too often public opinion polls substitute for dynamic leadership. But a real leader must have this bold power of decision, this sense of captaincy, you know, being the captain of the ship, to be able to successfully confront all the storms and obstacles that will surely arise. Another quality of leadership is consistency. The man or woman aspiring to a leadership role, or a man or woman thrust into such a role, or simply finding themselves in that role, must always be consistent in what they say and what they do. A leader is one who must make a decision and stick to it. When a leader is not consistent in the way he or she does things, in his or her decisions, in his or her ways of dealing with others, there is confusion generated. Those who follow him must be able to depend on that consistency. There are so many different qualities a leader must possess to properly fulfill that important role in life, as we've just covered: righteousness, wisdom, vision, courage, humility, decisiveness, consistency. And there are many others that can enhance the ability of a leader already having these seven attributes of leadership. I'm sure you could add other such qualities that enhance a leader's ability to lead, but there is still one more major quality we must add to the seven already covered in this sermon. I've saved this particular one for last, even though it ranks right up there with righteousness and wisdom near the top of the list. And that quality is people skills. People skills. It's one maybe you don't hear much about when you hear information on leadership. A good leader must know how to work with people, with folks of all different kinds of personalities, folks with all different varied backgrounds and experiences they've gone through, and be able to create a unity of purpose from an oftentimes dissimilar group. When I'm, instead of saying he and she, it's for save time, I'm just going to say he. It means she, too. It's just easier just to have one, you know, subject thing here. He must be able to command their respect and admiration, their trust, their loyalty, and their responsiveness. He must be able to organize them and to motivate and inspire them to achieve both their peak accomplishment and their maximum potential under his guidance and leadership. Now, all that is one Herculean task. It's a very tall task, because all of these, all the resources and areas a leader must deal with, the human resources are by far the most challenging. And then add to that equation the fact that leaders with the people skills to fulfill all of that are rare indeed. You know, a couple years ago, Ron Barker had Megan Joseph come up, and he told about the boatload of money that she received in scholarships. It was unbelievable. And I've heard of a lot of that happening here in the last few years. And it's admirable that there are people out there who have learned. I mean, what I'm talking about today isn't something just that the Church of God knows. A lot of people understand this. They understand that to be a total well-rounded leader, you have to have people skills. And that involves loving people, serving people. And that's one reason that Megan got such a large amount of money to go to college, because there was someone somewhere who made an endowment where they had money invested, and the interest, or however they had it set up, would go to a particular student or students. And I mean, some of these endowments are millions and millions of dollars. And so each year, a large amount of money is able to be given to young people. But they have their committee, most of them don't do it themselves, but they have a committee looking at all the students, and they look at their resumes of what they've done for others. You know, Megan did a lot for others, serving in soup kitchens and three or four other places where she served. And so they know that there's a greater chance of that type of individual making a success in their life towards leadership that can advance society, that can do good, and that can make things better. And it's admirable that there are people like that, that understand that, and then have as their purpose in life something that will live on beyond them to help society in that way, and to help a person, a single person every year or whatever, to achieve that, to help them achieve it. So again, these people skills is something that, again, the world understands and values very greatly. A large part of what is termed people skills is actually love. It's actually love, an outgoing love and compassion for people. It is personality projected and love expressed in fine detail, expressed in friendliness, in fairness, in really listening to others, in positiveness and in praise, in encouragement, even in humor. You know, the leader has to have a sense of humor. He can't be just stoic and, you know, not just let down and laugh sometimes. In commitment and genuine concern for others, in a sincere interest in others' lives, hopes, and dreams. And again, that love doesn't dominate, it cultivates. The foundation of true leadership is love, and God is going to judge us on how we loved and served those we knew and were around. You know, it's something that maybe we don't think about, but, you know, we love God, we serve Him, we obey Him, but God's going to judge us on how we love those we knew and were around. When you're in the workplace or you're, you know, a leader in the church, that's doubly true. You know, you better be loving those people you know are around. And in the workplace, there's disasters if that doesn't happen. To inspire and command the respect of those he leads, a leader must have a warm and giving attitude and personality. The warmth in someone's voice or in their smile is usually the first thing that strikes us about someone. And there have been many stories of people who serve their employer way above and beyond, you know, where they didn't get sleep for a couple nights, and yet they completed the task through all kinds of weather upsets, and they come back to the office, and their attitude isn't all that great at that point in most cases because they're so tired. But I've read of bosses there, and it's the warmth in that boss's voice and saying, thank you, you really went above and beyond. And, you know, just to put your shoulder on that employee's, your hand on that employee's shoulder and say, well done, George, you know, you really did. I really appreciate it. Where that employee realizes that this boss really means it's coming right from the depth of his heart. That goes a long ways, you know. And again, it's personality projected in this way, sincerely. A leader must build a sense of comradeship with them, so they'll feel free to share their ideas and suggestions with him. He must create an atmosphere of love and trust, never one of suspicion or fear. A sense of being loved and appreciated is so vital to the health and longevity of any group. Throughout history and throughout life, the one lesson that has been indelibly written is that one who does not have a sincere love for others will never command their deep loyalty, respect, or obedience from the heart. Isn't that the way it is between you and God? You love, respect, and obey Him because you know in your heart of hearts that He really cares for you, that He loves you deeply, and He always has your best interest at heart. You know, I don't think there's anybody in this room that doubts that God has our best interest at heart. The underlying reason why people follow any leader, especially through hard times, is that they believe that He truly loves them and has their best interest at heart. A group can be intimidated by fear, goaded by greed, but when the going gets rough, I mean really rough, only love binds the people together for the long haul. There have been so many inspiring stories on the television news over the last decade of company owners who kept their employees on through this last recession. There was one on, I think, 4 weeks ago that showed that. Maine kept everybody on and fully employed, even though the company lost money. You know, it was his company. And there's been stories like that. Or the employees who found out, and I've heard several stories like this in the last 5 years on the news, where the employees who found out upon the death of the owner of the company that they were all now the owners of that company. You know, what an example of love and loyalty in those leaders, you know, to look out for the future welfare of these people who had served him so long and so hard, you know, over those years. Leadership is ultimately about the environment the leader creates and the culture of opportunity that is developed in bringing each one in that organization up to his or her maximum potential. In other words, in leading others, you must get your success from their success. And that's the same principle brought out in Philippians 2:4. It says, let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. I mentioned fairness as being part of a leader's love that is so important, because any leader will be watched and evaluated as to his fairness and impartiality and judgment. And even minor mistakes in this area can cause havoc. One example that sticks with me is years ago, I worked for a major university back east. And this is a university that had 15,000 employees, not to mention the students. But the students were 30,000, but they had a lot of government grants. But my boss was the controller of the whole university. And there was a lot of different divisions. We all worked in the main administration building. There was an accounts payable section with about, anywhere from 10 to 15 employees. It varied. And one lady who had been the supervisor there for years was going to retire, so she told the boss, the controller. So everybody in that office thought this other lady was going to get that job. She had worked there for 25 years and was the leader. She was always helpful. She was the one with the most knowledge, the most dedication, and everybody thought that she would get the job. And she didn't. A young girl of about 25, 26, who had only worked there about a year, she got the job. Well, you talk about havoc. The controller deserved what he got. The lady who had been there for 25 years should have gotten the job. She quit. She just actually retired. Her husband had a good job, so she was able to just walk away. And nothing ever was right in there after that. She was the only one that could keep things going. And then the girl who got the job, she left in about a year or less. And so, you know, what a poor decision that was, you know. That was not fairness, you know. A person in a leadership position must be fair about things. There are so many component skills inherent in this area we call people skills. There are communication skills. A leader must express himself with clarity and persuasiveness. He must be able to teach others. Eloquence of speech can certainly add to any leader's effectiveness. The great orator, William Jennings Bryan, defined this quality of eloquence as being thought on fire. Thought on fire. So communication skills are important. Also, the ability to delegate and all the positive benefits to everyone that results from that are all a part of this very complex area of people skills. A leader's ability to train newcomers, to identify and select leaders, future leaders and administrators, to organize those functioning under him, to delegate the workload effectively and efficiently and fairly, and to inspire them to accomplishment is one of the greatest tasks that any leader will ever face. And that's why having good people skills is a tremendous asset to a potential leader. Leadership is an awesome responsibility. For sure, the path of leadership is not the easy way. It never has been, and it never will be. But it is the way to a better future for everyone involved in any endeavor in life. Leadership is not some special, isolated, magical trait to only be bestowed on a select few. Life requires that each of us become leaders in many ways. Parents are leaders. And what I'm about to say next, I used in a sermon at the Feast of Tabernacles this last year when I talked about parents. What I said was that when your children leave home, the few meager physical possessions they will take with them are nothing, nothing compared with what they'll take with them in their minds. Those beliefs, those values, that truth that can dispel all the deceptive falsehoods they will surely encounter, and all of that maturity of thought and understanding that you have built there over the years will serve them well all their life long. Yet how many parents exercise the leadership and the vision and the planning for making sure that each son and each daughter acquires this reservoir of essential skills and knowledge and the ability to use them well? They must be so equipped, and it's a parent's responsibility before God to ensure that this happens, to make sure that this happens. And if we fail in that responsibility and we send them into this world morally and mentally maimed, it will surely plague them and limit them for the rest of their lives. Yes, life requires that we become leaders. Parents are leaders. Husbands and wives are leaders. Teachers are leaders. And each and every Christian must be a leader as well. In a broad sense, leadership has been defined. You may be thinking, well, you know, I'm an older person. None of this is really that important to me. And I understand that. I mean, we grow in leadership as God helps us to grow, you know. But in a broad sense, leadership has been defined as, and I quote, the ability to influence others more than they influence you. I think that's a good decision. That's more on our level now. We're not out there, the movers and shakers in the church, you know. Christian leadership based on love and service is the best possible preparation for the bigger responsibilities we'll be given in the future. Just as the sixth day of preparation precedes each seventh day Sabbath, so too has this period of preparation to lead and to serve, you know, in any capacity that we're able to, perhaps into reach out to even further into society or to people that we normally wouldn't be able to reach to. But again, to lead and to serve all of mankind that we're able to reach has been given to us individually and collectively now, to whatever extent God gives us that. And we're somewhere late into that sixth day, just before the dawn of the millennial Sabbath. So we have an opportunity to practice some of these things and to grow in leadership, you know. Again, sometimes most of the time it's on a personal level, but again, God expects us to learn these principles and to put them into practice. Each of us has a God-given responsibility to lead in whatever area in life we're responsible for. As we sit here now today, today's leaders are busy making decisions that will create tomorrow's world, a world into which Jesus Christ will have to return to prevent its extinction and to usher in a leadership that will truly transform this world. We all need to ask God to equip us with the qualities we've considered here this afternoon so we may indeed be able to step out and lead now and forever.
Thank you, Mr. Handley. If you'd all take your hymnals and rise. Let's turn over to hymn number 157.